It's good to have Roger Duke here. Roger teaches in a couple of different institutions where he is being greatly used there. He's also involved in publishing. He's contributed to multiple volumes, as well as he's involved in a publishing company, Borderstone Press, which actually has a table set up here. And they have a very close connection to the Andrew Fuller Center. They're very helpful, good partnership there. And Roger has presented papers two or three times at our Andrew Fuller conferences. And so today he's coming to present a paper on the Baptist chaplain in times of war, looking specifically at the Revolutionary War. He can give you more, zero that in a little bit more also.
Well, thank you. One of the busiest people I know and one of the most gracious people I know is Brother Steve Weaver. He's a good brother. Let me just launch out into the deep. First in war, first in peace, one Baptist chaplain of the American Revolution. Introduction. Light Horse Harry Lee has famously eulogized his friend General George Washington as first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. This bromide might also be attributed to our Baptist chaplains, especially in the founding of the American Revolution as she was being forged through the crucible of war. From the time of the Protestant Reformation through present Baptist history, the military chaplain has played an integral part in times of war, national emergencies, as well as in times of peace. From their common deaths on the battlefield, men such as Ulrich Zwingli to Dale Getz have given that last full measure of devotion in the cause of Christ and His church. All the while, they attended to the spiritual needs of the soldiers who had gone into harm's way. Consider the Swiss reformer Zwingli. Zwingli himself died on the battlefield in the prime of manhood, aged 47. He made no use of his weapons, but contented himself with cheering the soldiers. Soon after the Battle of Cappel had begun, he stooped down to console a dying soldier when a stone was hurled against his head by one of the Wallstatters and prostrated him on the ground. Rising again, he received several other blows and a thrust from a lance. Once more, he lifted his head and looked at the blood trickling from his wounds. He exclaimed, "What matters this misfortune? They may kill the body, but they cannot kill the soul." These were his last words. In memory of his contribution to the Reformation, Zwingli's statue was a sword in one hand and the Bible in the other, and it stands at the Municipal Library in Zurich. Ministers of the gospel have always played an important role in history. Of particular interest are the chaplains of the United States. One such chaplain posed a most relevant question. Have you ever had something that you were so devoted for that you would be willing to die for it? Baptist pastor and U.S. Army chaplain Dale Getz answered in the affirmative. Getz was the first U.S. Army chaplain to be killed in action since the Vietnam War. He was a chaplain but also served as a pastor of the First Baptist Church of White, South Dakota from 2000 to 2003. His short pastoral ministry in White brought him great joy, but he longed for a ministry that would allow him to do disciple-making in a setting more suited to his gifting and calling, observed Stuart Schwenke, friend, colleague, and fellow Baptist pastor. He was killed in action after having been deployed in Afghanistan for less than a month. One observer of his death recounted that Captain Getz, 43, was killed in action on August 30th, 2010, near Kandahar Province, Afghanistan, when an improvised explosive device struck his convoy. Soldiers in a Humvee ahead of Getz were struck by an IED. When Getz was getting out of his vehicle to assist them, a second IED device exploded. Four other soldiers were killed with him. Previously, Getz had declared in an editorial, "Our freedom is worth dying for, and many have gone before us to preserve this freedom." He then asked the ultimate ironical question, "Some love their kids or spouse enough that they would die for them. Do you love anything that much?" These two Christian testimonies of Zwingli and Getz epitomize the spirit and commitment of all military chaplains, especially those in the Baptist tradition. Baptist chaplains of the American Revolution. The first Baptist to become chaplain in the Continental Army was the Reverend David Jones, who in 1776 was appointed to serve under Colonel St. Clair's regiment. He was also the first Baptist missionary in Ohio to the Indians and did two extended tours that lasted more than a year. When the Continental Congress was first called for a day of fasting and prayer, Jones preached to the Army Regiment a sermon entitled "Defensive War and a Just Cause, Sinless." So he would have agreed with Fuller. Chaplain Jones also was called upon to use his medical skills as well as remove bullets and even performed amputations, although he lacked the benefit of anesthesia. He also carried a pistol and musket and was not unwilling to use either in battle. Jones was highly trusted by General Washington and preached to the troops at Valley Forge. It was said of him that in danger he knew no fear, in fervent patriotism he had no superior and few equals, in the revolutionary struggle he was a tower of strength, he was a Christian without reproach. Chaplain Jones was at the battles of Ticonderoga, Morristown, and Brandywine. He was also present for the surrender of Lord Cornwallis. Leading up to the Revolution was the Reverend William McClanahan. McClanahan was known for his boldness and enterprising spirit as one of the early Baptist preachers in Virginia. He was the first Baptist to preach the gospel of God's grace in the lower counties of the northern neck of Virginia. It was reported that Captain McClanahan raised one of the companies of the Culpeper Minutemen for the Revolutionary Army. He led them not only into battle, but also into prayer, preaching to them regularly. His troops were principally Baptists, who were among the most strenuous supporters of liberty. The price of liberty was paid for on the battlefields by men like McClanahan. Another worth considering was a young man by the name of Thomas B. Montaigne, who was converted under the influence of the Reverend John Gano. He then baptized Montaigne into the fellowship of the First Baptist Church of New York City. His sister was also converted and baptized upon her profession of faith. The result of the conversion of these two youths to the Baptist persuasion forced their father, the elder Montaigne, to a new examination of baptism in the New Testament. In time, he too was immersed and became a Baptist. Reverend David Jones, Reverend William McClanahan, Reverend Thomas Montaigne, and Reverend John Gano were all Baptist pastors, preachers, missionaries, and shepherds of men's souls, even under fire. All were deeply committed to bringing Christ's word of spiritual liberty to those who fought for political liberty and against tyranny. Their ministry and service procured the respect of even General George Washington, who testified that Baptist chaplains were the most prominent and useful in his army. A case study, the Reverend John Gano. General Washington insisted on procuring the best chaplains for his troops. He also desired them to be adequately paid and to have them diligently attend to the religious work to the soldiers under his command. His orderly book shows an example order issued July 9th, 1776, and I quote, "The Honorable Continental Congress, having been pleased to allow a chaplain to each regiment with the pay of $33.33 per month, the colonels or commanding officers of each are directed to procure chaplains accordingly, persons of good character and exemplary lives, to see that all inferior officers and soldiers pay them a suitable respect. The blessing and protection of heaven are at all times necessary, but especially so in times of public distress and danger. The general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier, defending the dearest liberties and rights of his country." Unquote. From the beginning, the very beginning of the armed conflict, the spiritual needs of the men were considered to be one of the highest priorities by those in the highest places. Even before the outbreak of the hostilities between the colonials and Great Britain, the Baptists increased on every side. If one preacher was imprisoned, 10 arose to take his place. If one congregation was dispersed, a larger assembled on the next opportunity. The influence of the denomination was strong among the common people and was beginning to be felt in high places. In two points, they were distinguished. First, in their love of freedom, and secondly, in their hatred of the church establishment, i.e., the Anglican Church. Because of persecution, belief in personal liberty and freedom of conscience, the Baptists assumed a major role in all causes of the armed conflict. Further, the Revolution was fought in two stages, and the Baptists were at the forefront of both. There was a military war for political independence, and there was a spiritual war for religious independence. An argument can be made that those two stages began in the same place, Rhode Island, and that they ended in the same place, in Virginia. Although their numbers were rapidly growing, the Baptists were not so imposing a denomination in numbers at the time of the Revolution. Nevertheless, they threw their weight of their influence, whatever it might be, on the side of the colonies and liberty. Because of the political and spiritual needs of the country, the Baptists left the church members to enlist and asked that four of their ministers, whom they had selected, might be allowed to preach to the troops during the campaign with the same freedom as chaplains of the established, or once again, the Anglican Church. At this opportune time, the most distinguished clergyman of the denomination was Reverend John Gano. One of the many legacies Gano left us was that when the Revolutionary War began, he would lead the charge of the baptized believers in the cause of liberty. Gano served as a chaplain in General George Washington's army, where he maintained the same purity of character and the same zeal and energy in the cause of Christ that he exhibited on the mission field and in the pastoral office. While serving as a Revolutionary War chaplain, he was attached to and served as chaplain to General Clinton's New York Brigade under General George Washington. Chaplain Gano's experiences under fire. These are rather funny, so you'll have to listen very closely to me, please. The British occupied New York City at the outbreak of the war. Gano, concerned for his family's safety, was forced to abandon his pastoral charge at the Baptist church there. With no church to serve, he took a congressional commission to serve as chaplain with the colonials. At this particular point in Baptist development, Gano was one of the most distinguished clergymen of the denomination, as we've cited earlier. Originally, Colonel Charles Webb of Stamford and Lieutenant Colonel Hall invited Gano to serve as chaplain, but he initially declined. They proposed that Gano come and preach to the regiment, which was only a short distance from New York City. He accepted their invitation and agreed to preach on the next Lord's Day. Eventually, through providential circumstances, Gano entered into the chaplain service of the Continental Army. He was, even early on, in the fierce conflict and under fire. His cool and quiet courage fearlessly exposed himself and was afterwards commented on in the most glowing terms by the officers who stood near him. Gano personally testified that, "My station in time of actions, I knew to be among the surgeons. But in the battle of Chatterton's Hill, I somehow got in front of the regiment, yet I durst not quit my place for fear of dampening the spirits of the soldiers, or of bringing on me an imputation of cowardice. Rather than do either, I chose to risk my fate." This circumstance gave an opportunity to the young officers of talking, and I believe it has had some good effect upon them. Joel Taylor Headley observes concerning the same incident, "One cannot repress a smile at this account of himself in the front of battle. When a soldier whose appropriate place is there finds himself in the rear, we sometimes hear such lame excuses as, 'Somehow I got here.' But for one to use it for being under the enemy's fire when his appointed place is elsewhere in the rear with the surgeons is both novel and amusing indeed. If the impulses of this noble and patriotic nature had been better personally analyzed by the chaplain, he would have found that the reason for staying under fire were really the ones that brought him under fire." This must have been something for the ordinary soldier to behold indeed. In another battle, it was on such a sight as this that the fearless chaplain gazed with a bursting heart upon the troops. One witness recalls, as he saw more than half the army fleeing from the sound of cannon, others abandoning their pieces without firing a shot, and a brave band of only 600 manfully sustaining the whole conflict, he forgot himself and distressed the cowardice of his countrymen and filled the chivalrous and patriotic sympathy for the little band that scorned to fly. He could not resist the strong desire to share in the perils and eagerly get involved, somehow involuntarily pushed forward to the front. This is the true explanation of the somehow he just got out of his place in the rear and found himself in the in front of the regiment, just as it is the reason that we would not retire, though cannonballs were crashing about him. A truly brave man can never refrain from stepping to the side of brave men when, overpowered by numbers, they still make a gallant and desperate stand for the right. Reverend Gano was always in the midst of the melee, it seems. On another occasion, with his accustomed indifference to danger, he walked the breastworks, viewing the British approach till the whole space around the fort was red with the scarlet uniforms. The Colonials were in dire straits at this particular point. Captain Moody of the fort gave them a charge of grapeshot, which threw them into confusion for a while. This dispelled the British for a little bit, but at sunset, a couple of flags were sent demanding the immediate surrender of the fort and threatening, in case of refusal, to put the garrison to the sword. The two brothers Clintons, commanding the two forts, sent the same answer to the summons, vis-a-vis, that they chose the latter rather than the former. On the return to the flags, the firing recommenced, and for 2 hours it flamed and thundered in the darkness, and then came the final assault. The drums beat, and the hurried charge and the overwhelming mass of the enemy poured into one wild torrent over the feeble defenses, and by mere weight of numbers crushed down the little handful that stood so bravely and kept them at bay. The Colonials made break for the parapets and escaped down the cliffs to the river when the fort was overrun by the British. This is an example of how Gano, was as chaplain, was always in the midst of the action, not in the rear with the surgeons, as ought a chaplain to be. Another time, Gano, returning from a much-needed furlough at home, found his unit had removed. He ascertained that the regiment to which he belonged was with General Lee, so he hastened forward to join it. They were to join the main army on the banks of the Delaware River. It was at this time when Gano accompanied the division, which marched rapidly forward to join General Washington. He crossed the wintry Delaware with the army when it made its fearful midnight march on Trenton and shared in the dangers of the battle that followed. Chaplain Gano considered being at the front of the battle was his duty too. He well understood that if the common soldier saw the chaplain as a man of courage, this could possibly spur on their bravery also amongst the troops. There is no doubt that Gano was an inspiration under fire. His main focus, however, was the care of souls. In all his intercourse with the troops, he kept in view the duties of his station and never suffered an opportunity to pass in which he could rebuke sin or put a word of it in for admonition. For instance, early one morning, this is really funny, and I'm going to have to be very sensitive because of children. For instance, early one morning, he made his way to the regimental prayer service. Passing by a group of officers, one who did not see him swore rather profanely. All of the others saluted Gano, but when the profane lieutenant quickly turned round, saw him, and checking himself, said, "Good morning, doctor." "Good morning," replied Gano. "I see you pray early." The abashed and embarrassed officer colored and stammered, "I beg your pardon, sir." "Oh," replied the chaplain, "I cannot pardon you. You must take that case to God." Another time, he was in the proximity of a group of soldiers who were disputing whose turn it might be to cut the day's allotment of firewood. One grumbling soldier exclaimed in an angry manner, "I will be D if I will do it." Soon after finding that he must cut the plot of the firewood, he took up the axe to perform the deed. Gano immediately stepped forward and reaching out his hand and said, "Give me the axe." "Oh no," replied the soldier, "the chaplain shan't cut the wood." "Yes, I must." "Why?" said the soldier in surprise. "Because I just heard you say that you would be deed if you would cut it, and I would rather do it for you than that you should be made miserable forever." Gano not only was known for his patriotic courage, quick wit, and quick to rebuke or admonish soldiers' ways, was ever ready with a timely, impromptu sermon. Once a request came to Gano, go and spend a little time with them, the soldiers, at Canajoharie, General Clinton gave him leave to go. When he arrived, men wished he would dwell a little bit more on politics than he had commonly done. Instead of politics, he took the opportunity to give them a gospel sermon. He most assuredly knew and understood that some of them were about to meet their maker in battle and needed the message of salvation much more than a political address. He took his sermon from the words of Moses to his father-in-law, "Come, go thou with us, and we will do thee good. For he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, and with us thou shalt be in safeguard." Once Gano's regiment was encamped at Otisco for 5 or 6 weeks, previously to receiving orders for marching, their bivouac fell on the 4th of July. The officers insisted on Gano preaching. His thoughtful text was, "This day will be a memorial unto you throughout all generations." For the same time, the general informed him that he had received orders to move the regiment and that he should do it on the next Monday. He requested the chaplain to keep the orders quiet till after the service the next day, which was Sunday. Gano's timely and appropriate text was, "Being ready to depart on the morrow." And immediately after the sermon, the general gave orders to break camp and move out. Let us remember well the Reverend John Gano, chaplain of the Continental Army of General George Washington, as an early Baptist example of one who was a faithful minister in the name of our Lord Christ. Richard Furman commented on his influence as a Baptist minister, as well as his contribution to the spiritual needs of the troops. Furman observed concerning Gano, "His attachment to his country as a citizen was unshakable in the times which tried men's souls, and as a chaplain in the army for a term of years, while excluded from his church and home, he rendered it essential service, preserving his formal dignity with the purity which becomes a gospel minister. He commanded respect from the officers, inspiring them by his example with his own courage and firmness, while toiling with them through military scenes of hardship and danger." Most succinctly, however, William Cathcart may have captured the essence of Gano's influence as chaplain. His love for his country's cause, made the humblest soldier a brother. His genial manners and his fearless daring made him the special friend of officers of all ranks. While the spirit of the Savior so completely controlled his entire conduct that his influence over the military charge was unbounded. Thank you.
Thank you very much.